Welcome to the Hero Cafe. I am Sam Drake.
And I'm Cameron Bowes.
And today we've got, it's November, so we've got a lot of news, and we've also got the tail end. We've got our Justice League spoilers cast, which I'm sure a lot of you are waiting to hear. I'm excited to talk about it. Cam, you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, so let's start with, we'll start with the movie news. Well, it is the Justice League spoilers cast, so we'll get Thor out of the way. Thor, this last week, hit his $700 million worldwide gross in week three. So it's got a lot of steam behind it, and it's not stopping at 700, I guarantee you that. A lot of people think that it's going to hit 300 US here before the end of the year. Right now it's sitting at 246, I believe. I think that's what the numbers had it at.
I mean, there's really nothing bad to say about this as far as you and me are concerned, because we love the movie. I think it's fair to say that we both think that this is a great direction for the Thor franchise to go. We're huge fans of Taika Waititi, who has made his name in the indie world. So for him to completely reinvigorate this franchise and for this movie to come out swinging like it is, this is a huge win. Huge win for Marvel. And it has a lot more to do. I mean, we're going to be talking about another movie's numbers this month. That really puts all of this into perspective too. But like, this is so awesome. I mean, the fact that this movie is basically, made the entire gross of the first two movies combined, which that's just wild, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just mm-hmm. wild. In three weeks. It's not done yet. It's a monster. I could see it in a perfect world. It gets really close to a billion, but it might cap out somewhere closer to 850, maybe. Who knows? Just depending on how many more international markets it has to get released in. But either way, it could end right now, and it's already the most successful Thor, so it would be considered a huge win. But the fact that it's only 3 weeks in and it's going to keep going, that's really awesome. Really awesome. So, congrats is all I have to say on Marvel, because they're unstoppable, dude. They are unstoppable.
And really, this is a fantastic referendum for maybe the possibility of having more director-led creations out of Marvel. The Marvel Cinematic Universe isn't as tightly controlled as the Star Wars universe is, but it's not weird to hear that somebody got a little too prima donna and got let go.
I mean, there's been those stories, right? We've had these conversations of like, okay, is these movies made by committee, or are they actually letting the directors, you know, because Joss Whedon was very, very opinionated about what happened during Age of Ultron, which was during the Perlmutter era. So I think that really had mostly to do with that. But we've had other, you know, instances of like, okay, Edgar Wright had to drop out of Ant-Man. We had Patty Jenkins drop out of Thor: The Dark World, you know, so there's been Ava DuVernay, couldn't get to agreement with Black Panther. I think everybody, even her, would say that Ryan Coogler is the better fit. So it worked out in that case. But what's great is I think this year has been the strongest year as far as this year has been almost a direct correlation to that. It's almost like an answer to that bias, right? Is like, we had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That is 100% a James Gunn movie. There is almost nothing MCU related in that movie. Then you have Spider-Man Homecoming, which was probably the most MCU film out of all of them. But it's actually very unique to what John Watts was trying to do. So that's maybe like the one that you can kind of say. But, you know, and then you have Thor Ragnarok. And then next year, just in a couple months, we have Ryan Coogler's Black Panther. Which, that movie looks, just incredible. These lineups here that we've had, and I didn't even get into last year's movies, you know, it feels like, whether that was the case before, it feels like phase three of the Marvel Universe has really maybe corrected some of that, and really kind of, I think, taken the air out of that criticism, because Kevin Feige 100% is involved in all these, like he always has been. It just feels like they're letting those directors have that touch in their films that was maybe missing beforehand. Yeah, and I think that that's one of the good things that have changed out of the criticisms of the MCU, is that I like that it's become more director-focused than ever before. And that'll be interesting to see how that continues into Captain Marvel, into Ant-Man and the Wasp. And, of course, Infinity War is going to be its own. I mean, the Russo brothers have been given the keys to the kingdom as far as that goes, so that'll be their movie 100% too.
Right on. Okay, we got to keep going. So James Franco was recently announced to be in talks with Fox to do a Multiple Man movie, which is another one of these left field movie decisions, like the Morbius movie that we talked about last week. And it seems like people are, I don't know, if I were feeling more cynical, I would say that people saw that James Gunn made Guardians of the Galaxy a really successful movie, and now they're digging in the back of the closet for properties that maybe have a little bit of potential to them. They have my curiosity. I trust Fox with weird stuff more than I trust Sony with it. I think, like, if James Franco is in here, I'm going to have to... Who's his buddy that's in, like, every movie? His name escaped me right now. I'm going to have to look at Seth Rogen at least once in this movie, which to me is like, man, I wish I had friends like James Franco who were like, man, he's getting broke. We got to get him a part.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. Every time Fox has tried to do something new, at least recently... that's actually been their best work. Deadpool, Logan, you know, things in that area. Now, it's also fair to say that they were able to do something that both Sony and Marvel at the time weren't willing to do, or Warner Brothers, which is create a rated R side of this universe, right? And so for me, like, that's actually really where I would like them to stick around in. We talked about that a lot with, like, the Laura film that's been talking about and stuff like that. But, I mean, again, I'm kind of with you. They have my curiosity, right? Like, I love James Franco. He's one of the only people in that Seth Rogen clan that I think actually has any real talent. According to all the reviews for the Disaster Artist, that is 100% true. It's just such a weird property for him to be in talks for. Like, why, like, out of everything, like, why is that the conversation of the next film they're going to do? And plus, like, again, we have that whole wrinkle in all of this that's like, well, Fox is kind of looking to get acquired right now. So who knows what will really happen to any of this if that happens anytime soon, you know? So if I was James Franco, I wouldn't be signing on too quickly for anything when it comes to Fox. But I think, if I'm honest, I think I like them to see him in a little bit something else. But I'm with you. If they have my curiosity, we'll see how far this goes.
Speaking of that Fox acquisition, we recently got word that Sony is in talks to acquire those rights, which... I mean, our bias here on this show is pretty evident. I let out a little Darth Vader no when I saw that. I was not excited about that.
Yeah, that's rough. No, hopefully not.
Well, and lots of people are lining up to take a bite out of Fox. Comcast. I mean...
Yeah, Comcast was a big one.
Big money. And Sony's going to have to dig deep into their pockets if they want to beat out... Because I guarantee Disney's still in the running for those X-Men rights. And definitely those Fantastic Four rights. So if they want to beat out the mouse, they're going to have to dig deep. And I don't think even Sony has those kind of pockets. At least not the willingness to.
No, their Sony division has been in too much trouble. I don't think that if it came to a bidding war, they would lose easily. Especially with the news... which isn't related to this, but it is in the way of just money. Sony just forked over an unprecedented, like, truckload of cash that we don't know the entire amount for the distributing rights for Tarantino's last film. So they helped distribute Django Unchained, which made that his most financial hit. And so they've now partnered with him again for this Manson Murders movie that he's doing in the 60s. And so I just feel like who knows how much money they gave to that. So it's hard to imagine they can fork over a huge amount of cash for much else right now with the way they've been struggling over the last couple of years. Because they pretty much have now had to fork over half the distributing rights to Annapurna for the 007 franchise too. You know, they don't have direct distribution for that anymore. They have like a partnership. So yeah, they've been struggling a lot. And so if it comes down to a bidding war, Sony will lose. That's just what it comes down to.
Moving right along the movie news, I think the only thing left is that we saw that Ant-Man and the Wasp just finished filming, which is great news. I mean, what, they're slated for summer release, right? May?
Yeah, I think we were discussing this earlier. May is going to be Infinity War, and then it was July that was going to be Ant-Man.
That makes
Lost.
More sense. Is that right? Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, great news. We're excited that it's in the can. Now they get to go into post-production, have time for decent reshoots if they need to, pick up shots and stuff like that. I love Paul Rudd. I really like Ant-Man. It's not my favorite MCU movie by any means, but I really enjoyed that movie a lot. So, yeah, bigger and better things. You know, I'm excited to see Evangeline Lilly. I thought she was one of those standouts in the first one. So for her to go, like, full Wasp in this, and they showed some concept art back when they were doing a presentation this year sometime, before the Black Panther trailer came out. And from what I heard, a lot of the concept art was really cool. And so it looks like we're going to have a fun movie again, which they nailed the tone of the first one. So all hype for me.
Yeah. And part of the reason why we talk about it when they wrap up filming is because it's only really news that they wrap up filming like 2 months before the release date. Right. So this is kind of if you're excited about the movie right now, it looks like everything's going along swimmingly. So you can sleep a little better at night. Let's see. I think that's it for TV, or for movies. Nope, I almost forgot. How could I forget? We just got an Incredibles 2 teaser. I was looking at my wife, and she's like super duper super excited. I married a Disney girl, and so it's definitely news around this house whenever something new drops from Pixar. And this is a great little teaser, because it's the kind of teaser that tells you absolutely nothing about the story, but really tells you all you need to know about the tone and how much fun it's going to be.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it does, right? Like it, you know, one of the only things that I kind of was really hoping for when they first announced this was I was hoping that they allowed the children to grow up a little bit, just as we have as an audience. But they decided to not do that. This takes place pretty close to after the first movie's events. And so that, you know, this teaser also helps establish that timeline too. Just in the way that it's Jack-Jack, obviously, and Jack-Jack's still a baby. He's still very much a nuclear power weapon that you cannot control when it comes to his powers. And it's just fun. It's a fun teaser, right? Like you said, this is like a perfect teaser. This is what teasers are supposed to do. It's an announcement of the movie. It gets the tone set, and you get to see things that you'll want to see. And Jack-Jack, you know, he was so funny at the end of the first movie. He defeats Syndrome. A baby defeats Syndrome, you know? So, yeah, man, this is... I can't... Incredibles 2 is something that, I mean, it's been a long time coming. And, you know, I'm glad that they've taken the time to hopefully get this right. You know, Brad Bird, the director, he was very adamant about taking the time and not just rushing into it. And the fact that it's so perfect because... Even before The Incredibles, you know, The Incredibles was just ahead of its time. It almost got onto that superhero hype train, but it was right before it, right? And so now we're living in a world where superheroes rule. You know, they rule the box office. And so I can't wait to see the commentary, because I know Brad Bird has things to say about the superhero genre as a whole. And so for him to put it into this movie is going to be really interesting. I'm excited. I'm very excited about this movie.
Well, I'm super excited too, because like the first Incredibles movie came out a while ago, and it's one of my like top 10 ride or die movies, right? I can toss it in any old time at all, and it's always going to be entertaining. I'm always going to have a good time.
Yeah, it's right under The Lion King for me as far as Disney animation productions and stuff go. It's my favorite Pixar film, and then Disney animation, The Lion King. So they're like right up there for me, for sure, dude. I can't wait.
All right. We're going to move into TV news now. And I think at the top of that TV news, even though it's kind of not a lot, but we recently saw news come over the wire that they have a Harley Quinn animated TV show that DC has slated for their streaming service that we know nothing about. Which makes total sense to me. Karen, you said that you saw it come over the wire that they were looking for Margot Robbie to voice this.
Yeah, I kind of seen that today. You know, I don't think anything's official. It's definitely just kind of a rumor, but it sounds like, you know, they're trying to get Margot Robbie to do the voice for Harley Quinn, which is a great choice. I thought, you know, Suicide Squad's not a good movie, but I'm kind of one of those people that came out of that movie enjoying it because the characters were so good, which is really interesting considering what happened this weekend, and I kind of like an opposite. We'll get into all that. But, yeah, I enjoyed Deadshot. I enjoyed Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. I thought she was perfect. as far as that character goes and an on-screen version. And so for her to come out and be the voice of this, I think it's great. There's been many, many actresses that have come out and done their version of Harley Quinn, and I really liked hers. So I don't think it's necessary. I think it's just a name to attach to it because she has huge star power right now. And from what it sounds like, she's probably going to get her first Oscar nomination this year. So they'll really piggyback off of that. I almost guarantee it. But if you were to say to me that Tara Strong was, you know, announced as the cast, the voice, then I'd be like, well, heck yeah. You know, like either, I don't care. Like when it comes to the animated stuff, it doesn't really matter to me as long as the voice performance is good. But again, attaching Margot Robbie makes sense because it's got that name power to it and they'll be able to sell it on probably that alone. And especially when you're obviously going to have to sell this because like you said, we don't know anything about this streaming service. We know that Young Justice is going to premiere on there. This is going to premiere on there. And who knows what else? Titans is going to be, yeah. So they're stacking up some lineups here. So you could tell this is coming down the pipeline pretty quick. But we'll see, you know, because all of these things are only in production right now. So they will have to wait until it's closer to premiere time for them to hit all of these things. But yeah, we'll see. Until we actually have news about the streaming service, it's hard to get excited about any of this. Who knows?
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I'm personally like more than a little frustrated that we know three different shows that are going to premiere on this, and we have no idea how it's going to be priced, how they're going to bill, what else is going to be on there, right? Am I going to be able to watch the Nolanverse trilogies anytime I want, right? What's on there, what's not? We don't know anything about that. I think they probably know that people are going to get more excited about content, and as soon as they give everyone a price, then that gives something for people to whine about. So if all you do is tell them what's going to be on there, you kind of kick that can down the road until you're better prepared to deal with it. I think the only other thing about this, I like the synopsis, I think is really interesting. The whole point of the show is Harley Quinn has broken off with the Joker, and she wants to be the queenpin of Gotham City all by herself, which is great. I think as popular as the Harley Quinn character is, there's plenty of people who are very, very uncomfortable with a lot of those central tentpole features of that. And so we're getting more and more people who write Harley Quinn who are writing her as someone who's not okay with the way the Joker treats her. There's a couple of those scenes in the Injustice comic book, which follows an alternate universe. Stuff like this, stuff like what Sean Murphy's doing over on his Batman miniseries, White Knight. You know, the Harley Quinn characters are really interesting in that one too. So it's kind of, I'm happy to see people doing something else other with this, other than sexy clown who likes to beat people up and shoot people, right? Because that only has so much legs out here in the real world. So I'm just glad people are messing with it.
Yeah, me too. I love Harley Quinn, so any Harley Quinn is a good Harley Quinn for me.
Right on. Okay. And the only other TV news that we have is that Luke Cage 2 just finished filming, which is good to see. We only know about it. They didn't put out like a big release or anything. We just saw Instagram posts from the rap party. But I'm really excited for this one. I like the first Luke Cage, it seems, more than a lot of people did. But I think Netflix has kind of shown themselves willing to adapt to this kind of stuff. I think they definitely want basically put out the most strong, most stable stable of shows that they can, because honestly the point of these movies is kind of as a value add for Netflix subscribers, but it's not like we're paying by the episode. The whole point of these is that they do really well and more people sign up, right? Karen, you fell on the other side on Luke Cage. You enjoyed it, but you didn't think it was super great.
Yeah, I think it's in the I mean, it's more the middle. It's like the one show that's in the middle for me. If Defenders and Iron Fist are at the bottom, Daredevil, Jessica Jones at the top. I don't know when we're going to talk about it, but another show just released that's at my very top. And then we have Luke Cage, which again is kind of middle ground for me. The first six episodes are fantastic. So great. Love them. But then the show fell off for me really bad at the second half after a certain turning point. Hopefully the season two can kind of right some wrongs that I had with the second half. Great character, though. I love Luke Cage. So here's to hope in season two. And it looks like, I think Danny Rand will be in it to some degree, which is kind of interesting. So we'll see.
I think they're going kind of for a Heroes for Hire thing. I think a lot of that has to do with spending more time on developing Danny Rand on screen to make the next Iron Fist season a little less thin, which makes sense to me, honestly.
Yeah, Heroes for Hires, I think, is what they should have done really in the first place, but...
All right, then we'll move into comics news. We don't have a ton, but we'll hit it real quick. Kick-Ass, we mentioned last week that the announcement was going to come right after we finished filming, so the announcement has come probably since you've gotten the episode, but we want to talk about it here. Miller is relaunching or rebooting his Kick-Ass comic book, which is a classic, with John Romita Jr. as the illustrator. And instead of featuring a teenage white boy, this Kick-Ass is African-American, a mom, and an Iraq war vet, which is pretty much the exact opposite.
Badass is what it is. I'm a big fan of this news. I gotta be honest. He dropped the cover. That was the first thing I saw from the news. And I loved it, man. That cover is amazing. It really hit home is what it did. Coming from a military family. So, Kick-Ass made Mark Millar into what he is. No doubt about it. And so for them to go back into that well, it's going to be hit or miss, right? If you go back to something that works, it's got to be better than it was before. Is this the way to do it? I don't know. But I have to admit, I'm excited about it. The art looks great. The concept behind who Kick-Ass is this time around looks great. I'm glad that they changed it. And I thought some really good ways, because I'm a big fan of the Kick-Ass that was before, and Hit Girl. And he says that Hit Girl news is coming in the future here too, real soon. This is just the Kick-Ass side of things, but for them to hit those notes that I think are topical to today, an African American, looks like single mom, war veteran. It sounds like you're checking boxes, but. When you put something like that into the role of Kick-Ass, that's really cool. That's really cool. I like it. I'm excited to read it. So
I'm excited to read it, too. I think it also bears mentioning because there is some ambiguity here. When Miller was acquired by Netflix, the things that they didn't get were Kick-Ass, Hit Girl, which was attached to Kick-Ass, and Kingsman, which they're still arranged under some sort of arrangement with Matt Reeves. Is that correct?
Matthew Vaughn and Fox, so that's Kingsman's side there. Image Comics is distributing Kick-Ass now. That's interesting because, again, with the Netflix acquisition, that being one of the only things they didn't get, it was always kind of a question of like, okay, well, if there's going to be Kick-Ass news, then Netflix doesn't have it. We already know that. So who's going to have it? And it's being published under Image Comics, which... we've talked about it before. Image is really great. They have that way of tapping into the weird and the indie and making hits out of it. So, you know, it's been doing that with The Walking Dead for a decade, basically. So, yeah, this is great. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I think it makes total sense for them to go through Image. For people who aren't familiar, Image is not a publisher in the way that we think of Marvel and DC as publishers. They don't exert a whole lot of editorial control. They kind of exist as an interface between creators and the rest of the distribution model. As long as it keeps selling, they'll keep publishing it. And so anything that's on Image is creator-owned. They're kind of, you know, I mentioned last week that just about anybody who works in comic books works on a freelance basis. And so these comics are ones that don't have to go through Marvel or DC editorial. They don't have to go through any of that. And more importantly, they can sell a whole lot less issues and still be worth the time for these artists because they get a much larger share of the pie, right? For little books, that means that it's profitable. For blockbuster mega hits like Walking Dead, it means that the guy walks away with gobs of money. So it makes total sense to go through Image to me. But let's see. You got anything else you want to say?
No, we'll keep reporting on it as it comes in, but as of right now, that's all we got.
Cool. And the only other thing that we've got on comic books is, unfortunately, the Blue Beetle comic book has been canceled. Solicitations came through, and the last issue on this current run is going to be in February. This is the second DC Rebirth comic to be cut, the first one being Superwoman. And it was never quite a popular line. These days, you got to sell almost nothing to get cut just because sales are depressed across the board. But, you know, I'm disappointed. I love Blue Beetle, but I think most of Blue Beetle's fans are Young Justice fans as well. And unfortunately, a lot of those guys are cartoon guys, and it's not necessarily driving all the sales into the comic books that I think they were counting on. So that's a bummer. If you like Blue Beetle, buy the last couple issues and enjoy it until February.
Bummer for me too. I guess I can't really say like it's hit me super hard, because if I'm being honest, I haven't read the comics, but I'm a big fan of the character. So I always want these things to succeed when it comes down to it, you know? So if it comes back someday, hopefully it comes back better, bigger, better and stronger. So, but it's disappointing.
Well, and Blue Beetle's a big part of that Young Justice show, but on the grand scheme of things, he's kind of a D-list player. So it's a bummer. He's obviously not going anywhere from Young Justice. He'll continue to be part of that show, which I'm super excited about, because I've been hurting for Young Justice for a long time here. So that's going to wrap up our regular news section, and we're going to move into our Justice League spoilers cast. There's some Justice League numbers that we're going to talk about, but this has been an immediately polarizing movie, which is to say the least. I've talked to some people already about it, and nobody can quite come to a consensus on what they feel about this movie. Cameron, what's your headline? What's your first thoughts before we get into the mix of all this?
So it's weird, man. It's weird going into a movie with such low expectations. And still coming out of the movie disappointed. I can't really mince words, man. It's a real bummer for me, man. I went into that movie more than anybody, honestly, hoping to love it. And for a lot of people, surprisingly, a lot of people I trust, they walked out of the film with the positive overweighing the negatives. I've seen it twice. I had to make sure. I wanted to give it a second chance after going in with my own expectations, trying to take the movie for what it is. And I'm disappointed, man. I didn't come out of that movie feeling anything. And that's a weird feeling, a really weird feeling. especially because when a movie has Superman, he's my second favorite hero of all time. And when they have Batman, which is in my top three as well, he's my third. It's weird coming out of a movie and just being like, well, that was something. And this is a spoiler cast, so spoiler alert, but Superman's in the movie. He's alive. And for me to feel absolutely nothing towards that is, that's a feeling I just can't shake. And it's really stuck with me over this last weekend. We'll get into it heavy here in a little bit, but I'll toss it back over to you. But yeah, I'm disappointed, man. This has been a crazy weekend, something I never thought I'd say, for sure.
Okay, so this is one of those rare shows where Cameron and I get to provide contrasting opinions. And I'm excited for this, because this is a lot of fun when it happens. I walked into this completely prepared to grade Justice League on a curve, because it's one thing to grade a movie compared to everything else in the field. And really, superheroes right now is deeply stacked, heavy hitting, highly competitive, right? You don't just take a swing at Age of Ultron and not throw your full weight behind it. This is where the big boys play right now, which is wild to me. You tell me that 10 years ago that superhero movies is going to be where everyone brings their heavy hitters. I digress. So I did. I walked into this fully prepared to grade on a curve, and I walked away with a net positive experience out of this movie. And I feel like this has to come with a lot of caveats, right? If we're not grading on a curve, this movie, to me, objectively, is a C movie. And I can give it a C. On my best day, I'll give it a B-. And I think a C is pretty darn fair. It's not an F. You know, it's not a train wreck, right? It tells a story. It does it in order, right? As far as I'm concerned, it gives you at least to a D. And I think it's pretty fair to say it's a C. But like I said, grading on a curve, this has been a positive experience for me. And I'm willing to talk about, I mean, because this is, my opinions are going to feel pretty darn hand-wavy, because I did a lot of that, right? You know, you hand-wave past the fact that, like, the narrative structure in this movie takes, I don't have any time to explain, to a literal set, and they just never actually explain anything, and they pretend like that's okay, right? In another movie, that would bug the crap out of me. I think consistently never explaining anything tended to work just a little bit for me, particularly when you're just happy that they got everyone on screen and in order, and stuff like that. So if you're the kind of person who's frustrated by hand waving, Cameron's gonna have a lot for you. But I did. I walked away from this movie. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. It does not stack up objectively to hardly anything else, personally. But if we're talking about fun factor, I think the mass market is going to respond to this movie, which ultimately is the mark of success. But that's my title.
Okay. Well, we should probably get right into it. This movie is not a success, so we'll just start off with that. It made less than $100 million this weekend, which is abysmal, is what it is. You will be seeing massive, and I mean massive, repercussions to the DCEU as we know it. Because of this, it already had massive repercussions when Batman vs. Superman opened to $166 million. This movie has made $72 million less with more superheroes in it. It is crazy. I would have never, and I mean never, predicted that it would have opened this low. Man, just craziness. I can't, like, when the numbers came out on Sunday, I was shocked. Thor Ragnarok beat this movie. I mean, Hulk straight up Loki'd this movie is what it did. Craziness, man. Anyways, that has nothing to do with what the movie is. So, let's talk about the positives. I'll talk about the positives. Things that I liked about this movie. I thought that no character was done a disservice as far as how they're portrayed, necessarily. I do have problems with one character, but it's not so much the character's fault or the actor's fault. But, you know, walking out of the film, Wonder Woman's great. Walking out of the film, once again, I think Batman is my favorite Batman as far as how he's portrayed, as both Bruce Wayne and Batman. The look of him, everything like that. So it's just more disappointing about the news that we keep getting from him, at least to me. But it is what it is. And, you know, the newcomers. Now you have to talk about the newcomers. Aquaman doesn't have a whole lot to do in the film, but he's great. I love Jason Momoa. I can't wait for his movie at Christmas time next year. I think he's going to crush it. And the two standouts for me were The Flash and Cyborg. A lot of people had a lot of criticisms. It's so funny. I come out on such opposite ends of a lot of people in this movie. A lot of people thought that Cyborg was the one that was the least interesting coming out of the film. And I completely disagree. I thought that out of everybody, he was the most understated and the one character out of all this that I actually thought had a complete story arc in a lot of ways. So I was a big fan of what Ray Fisher did with Cyborg for what little time he has in the movie. And then The Flash, Ezra Miller does great portraying Barry Allen in a humorous way. Not all of his jokes land, which we'll get to later, but for the most part, he provides a lot of levity to the film, has some great action scenes. He has the best action sequences in the movie. Yeah, and I'm excited to see where his movie goes, considering Flashpoint seems to be, I have a feeling we're speeding towards Flashpoint faster than we might have been expecting. So, yeah, characters, you know, that's the one thing you'll see a lot of people really come out positively about the movie is that a lot of the characters were great. The villain was not, you know, you start hearing a lot of the same things when you're reading reviews and stuff like that over the weekend. And I have to agree, those are pretty much the two major points, right? That the characters I thought were great. I just thought that the movie that they were in was not. So that's pretty much the majority of my positives there. I like both end credit scenes. That's, you know, big stuff there.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the character interactions in this movie as well. If you have Justice League and the characters don't work well together, you don't have a Justice League movie. So I really enjoyed the work that went into that. Let's see, what else? I mean, well, you know, I think I'm with Cameron, honestly. You know, I don't think I'm going to say anything different than Cameron's saying. I think just from my perspective, I'm willing to grade this on a curve. But, like, the villain was not good. Structure was a mess, right?
Yeah. I mean, is it fair to say that for you, the characters was enough, you know, to push this movie over the edge for you? Whereas for me, it wasn't enough. I mean, is that fair to say in this case? Like, we had the same positives, but for you, it just kind of came out on the more positive side.
So yeah, I think the character interactions for me, they did a lot to gloss over what I expected to be bad, right? People said the Steppenwolf, the Steppenwolf performance / animation / characterization was really bad. The character Steppenwolf comes from a line of comics that was drawn and created by Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby is a classic guy in the comic books world, and if you listen to our Thor spoiler cast, you'll know that almost all the aesthetic on Sakaar is deeply, deeply inspired by Jack Kirby's style, particularly his sci-fi style, right? Jack Kirby was actually a pretty darn versatile illustrator. He could do a lot of stuff pretty convincingly, but when he drew outer space, he drew it a particular way. So these characters from Apocalypse and New Genesis, this whole kind of cadre of characters where Steppenwolf comes from, were illustrated in that style. So I want, for people who have seen both movies, I want you to think of Sakaar, right? And then I want you to compare that aesthetic to what they decided to do with Steppenwolf here in this movie. And tell me which one you think worked better, right? It's not hard to go up on Google and just find pictures of Steppenwolf as he's illustrated in the comics, right? He's a lot less monster and a lot more goatee and a helmet, right? There was a part of me while watching it that was like, you know, I kind of wish I would have had that, but I also know that, like, that's not Zack Snyder's style, and Zack Snyder's still all over this movie, right? But yeah, I think you spend enough time with these characters, and it really left me wanting more of that, right? Which I think is, if you can't give the audience that feeling, that they want more scenes of your characters interacting, they want to see them do more things, right? You know, I think you have enough here to where you could drop them in any situation, and it's going to be enjoyable, right? Even if the situation is like bizarro land that doesn't make any sense, right? And we can get to specific negatives. Like I said at the open, it kind of worked for me that they refused to explain hardly anything in this movie. I think the thing that breaks it for me in other movies is when they spend half an hour on one particular plot point, and then they ran out of exposition time, so they breeze past everything else, and you're just expected to keep track. But, like, this movie is pretty consistent. It doesn't tell you what the mother boxes are. It doesn't tell you why we care. It doesn't tell you why Steppenwolf is here, really. It doesn't tell you anything. It just says, hey, we're going this way, better keep up. And I think if you're going to be consistent with it, at least the audience can acclimate to that, right? At least the audience can acclimate to never being told anything, I guess. I guess we're just along for the ride, right? And that may sound like a silly defense for this movie. There's certainly plenty of people who are very, very upset with the fact that this movie didn't do better. But, you know, I think a lot of this is just coming from a really strong desire to look over a multitude of sins just to see something that's moving in the right direction. Because, I mean, Cameron, for all your unhappiness with this movie, is it kind of, even if it's starting and stopping, does it kind of look like it's going the right direction compared to Batman vs. Superman or compared to maybe some other missteps in the past?
Sure. That's one of the biggest things with this movie, right, is the last 5 minutes of the movie is a course correction, 5 minutes. It puts characters in a position that is accurate to their comics, both with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, all those people. Every single character is where they need to be what DC is trying to now create going forward. So in that way, I think they succeed. For me, how we got there, not great. But again, we'll get into that. It's a tough thing again, because this kind of just feels like a movie, a transitional piece is what it does. The Avengers wasn't a transitional piece though. That was a launching pad. So it's just so different, and I'm not going to try to compare Marvel to DC in this, but it's hard not to. And so yeah. For me, it's just the way we got to it is so sloppy that it really frustrates me, and more than ever. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'll say it probably to the last dying days of my life. I'm a fan of Batman vs. Superman. I thought that despite that movie was fiddled with by producers, it had a clear vision, and ultimately the vision was there. I think what I have a hard time with this movie is that I don't see a vision. They credit Zack Snyder for this movie. They credit Joss Whedon for the screenplay with Chris Terrio, but I don't really see either of them in this movie. If this really was Zack Snyder's movie, we would have had better action scenes than we had. And there was hints of better action scenes in here. But I sure didn't see them, but not at the end. The second time I watched it, there's this scene that bothers me to no end, because it's one of the most unsatisfying action scenes I've seen in a long time. Man, they really hyped up this tunnel sequence with Steppenwolf and the team for the first time. And again, there was some beginnings of greatness in that scene when the Flash tips that sword back to the Wonder Woman. I was like, oh man, we're about to freaking crush this. And it just kind of ends. And Aquaman doesn't even, he's not even in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he shows up at the end just to give him a little bit of time. Just some weird, weird things in this movie that just drive me nuts. Man, the entire sequence of, like, Superman and the team kind of going at it. It's like, it's all reshoots, man. I miss so many people won't say this, but I just miss Zack Snyder's style in this movie, if I'm being honest. Because you could say whatever you want about his storytelling. I don't think, for at least anybody without a real bias towards him, he is 100% a visual storyteller. And so when you go and watch Man of Steel, despite some shortcomings in that movie, I love that movie too. I'm a huge fan. But like, the thing that drives that movie is, like, you have some incredible action sequences, like stuff that I never thought I'd see in a Superman movie ever. For the first time, I felt Superman's power on screen. And again, like, I didn't feel any of that. The only Zack Snyder scene that is 100% in this movie is the Batman scene at the very, very beginning. Mm-hmm. That had Zack Snyder written all over it. And oh my goodness, it is my favorite scene in the entire movie. when that robber just comes out of the window, dude, mm-hmm. and he looks over and Batman is just perched there on the gargoyle, I was like, oh my God, that is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, if I was a burglar, I'd be taking a selfie. I'd be like, yes. dude, like, that was so incredible. Yeah, but pretty much from there on forward, I don't know who directed this movie, honestly. It just feels like it's WB's Justice League, not Zack Snyder's Justice League, not Joss Whedon's Justice League. It just feels like a weird mix of all three. And maybe that's naive of me. Maybe that's trying to pass blame on something I didn't like. And I'm fully open to that possibility. I'm not completely biased. But that's just what it felt like. So, anyways, kind of getting into some more other things. The technical issues this film has. I'm usually not a person that, like, trips out about that stuff real hard. But, boy. Every time this movie was... You could physically tell where the reshoots are in this film. And it bugs me to death. There's this part at the very beginning where Aquaman and Bruce Wayne are having this conversation. And for the most part, the scene was pretty consistent. And I could tell that a lot had been cut out, which bothers me too. We'll get to that soon too. But just that this one part, all of a sudden, you could just tell that they had to like transition the scene in a different way. And so then reshoots come in. And like the lighting in the background, which is always the hardest part of reshoots, is different. Jason Momoa has had to redo his highlights in his hair, so his highlights are really bright. And then you could tell it was in like a green screen room or pool or something, because Jason Momoa has to do this freaking weird like black flip type thing, dive into the water, and it looks like garbage. and like just stuff like that, like that's the most example I'll get into. But I've seen it so many times in the movie that it took me out of it. I'll do one more. There is 100%, and I noticed it even more the second time. There's a whole different sideline, side story I should say. Sorry, about a Russian family in a house that it cuts back to way too many times. 100%. That was not in the original script. That is all reshoots right there. Because I seen it even more the second time. They needed the Justice League to save real people in the final act of this film, instead of just going up against the baddie with nobody in the world. Because they set themselves up at the end of the film to not be around any people. That way they didn't have any collateral damage like they had to deal with in Batman vs. Superman. Or Man of Steel, really, is what they're in direct confrontation with. Because Man of Steel tried to do something funny at the end of the movie, too, about all that. But they still needed the Justice League to save people. Like, otherwise, like, they're not superheroes saving the world. Like, they're just fighting a villain out in the middle of nowhere in Russia. So they had to, like, throw in this family in the reshoots. And the Flash has to go save them. And then Superman goes off and saves a building of people that you never see. In the film, you just think it's this one family in this entire area. And all of a sudden, Superman has a whole building of people. You're like, wow, that would have been great to know. But instead, we focus on this one family, and Flash saves them. Every time it cuts back to them, it's like, well, that's a reshoot. And it just like took away. I was like, I don't care about that. Like, I just want to see the characters.
Well, okay, so If I'm being honest, I think the vast majority of my criticism is going to stem from the from the fact that this movie is made by like five different people. And so I think, okay, just to make sure everyone's on the same page, we're going to recap that in like 60 seconds. So they had Zack Snyder on this film as writer and director, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mostly director. He's credited for the story, but the screenplay was singular to Chris Terrio. So he was really only producer, director, and they gave him a story credit.
Right on. So he started it, and he got, would it be fair to say, 75%, 80% of the way through this movie?
They had, as far as I know, they had wrapped production. So there is probably, and that's what, there's been a petition out, but as far as we know, there should be a somewhat of a finalized version of his film, because they did get all the way through the production, I believe, before tragedy happened. They didn't like what they saw. So they went back. But yeah, either way, no matter what it was, mostly done.
So production wraps. Zack Snyder has a family tragedy, steps away. He's not director anymore. The suits show up and decide they don't like what they see. So they go and hire someone who's really, really different than Zack Snyder. They hired Joss Whedon. And I guarantee they called that guy up because he's had a lot of, one, he has a lot of name recognition. And two, he's had a lot of success with the Avengers films. I believe he directed Avengers 1, and he wrote Avengers 2. So this whole Justice League film is about trying to replicate the success of Avengers. So they go and they get the director, the Avengers, and they say, hey, fix our movie. So it would have been one thing. I think there's a ton of fair criticism that comes in to this decision to hire somebody completely different than Zack Snyder. Not a similar kind of style. Different focus. Different kind of movie, right? We can compare, I think Man of Steel is some of Zack Snyder's best work. You can compare that contemporaneously with, I think it came out around the time of Avengers 1, and they are not the same movie at all, right? Two different directors going in two different directions. So Joss Whedon comes in, does significant rewrites. He's got a writing credit right now on this film, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they now credit Chris Terrio and Joss Whedon for the screenplay.
Significant rewrites and significant reshoots, basically, to quote-unquote fix the movie. Which, I would have liked to have seen Joss Whedon in as a producer, you know, call the guy up, ask his opinion, right? But, so that's where a lot of these problems are going to stem from. And I think that's when we can really get into the issue that I think is the single... Well, there's lots of weak links in the show, but they all cycle back to the fact that we have a really significant split in vision for this show. And it pulls characters, it pulls story beats, it pulls scenes in two different directions because they couldn't get somebody similar to Zack Snyder or somebody who was committed to doing Zack Snyder's movie for him. They got Joss Whedon in, who is big stuff, and who wants to make his own movie, right? And I could go down the list. I think I'm going to start with Batman because we have two different guys. One of them wanted to do Batman as in his prime, and the other one wants to do old man Batman needs to retire. And it changes from scene to scene. It bugs me to death because the last thing Ben Affleck needs right now is more reasons to not cast him in that Matt Reeves movie. And unfortunately... I think he's going to get boned because of this, right? I mean, which is the worst, because it's not even his fault, right? I really enjoyed him as Batman. Honestly, I'd love to see him in a lot of stuff. I think the scenes where he plays Bruce Wayne in this movie, they're fantastic. I even saw some Clooney there in a couple of those scenes, which I think a lot of people would say is a quintessential Bruce Wayne, right? Like, George Clooney basically is Bruce Wayne in real life, right? But I really liked that character. And he's really two different characters. We have Bruce and Doppelganger Bruce. And it really just depends on whoever was in the director's chair that day. And I think if you can't even do the same character the same way, maybe Josh... I mean, I guarantee Warner Brothers told him, write your check, right? You know, I don't know how you're supposed to say no to that. But I'd love to know whoever's decision it was to basically put two different directors on two halves of the movie. And they didn't... I don't know what they expected.
Yeah, it's so funny, too, because during the entire press tour, everybody was told to make sure that they say that Joss Whedon was hired to execute Zack Snyder's vision. Bull hockey. No way, dude. No way. After seeing the movie, I guarantee that's not the case. You know how I know this? Because literally, I can count on one hand... And I can only think of a max of about three right at this moment. I can only think of three original shots of Henry Cavill as Superman. And there's one specific giveaway. And that is the stupid mustache gate that happened with Mission Impossible. So for anybody not in the loop, Henry Cavill shot Justice League, went on to do Mission Impossible 6. He's got a killer mustache for Mission Impossible 6. Reshoots had to happen after Joss Whedon gets pulled in. But Paramount will not let Henry Cavill shave his mustache, costing WB millions of dollars to digitally remove his mustache. And we'll say it's because of time, right? Sure. but either way, this movie makes a horrific mistake of opening the movie with Superman with lip disease. And it is horrendous. It was the most jarring thing I've ever seen in an opening of a film in a long time. And I was like, oh no, this cannot be. This cannot be what happens for the rest of the movie. Ugh, and it does. It never gets better. Like, it's obvious. It is obvious to me. Like, they reshot everything. Almost everything that had to do with Superman. And... it takes me out of the movie, dude. Like, every time Superman was on screen, I wanted to love it. But I can't look past his upper lip. Like, it sounds so silly and so stupid to get a hang up on. But it took me out of film every time. I could not see it. It just looks so stupid. And then they do this weird thing with Lois Lane. in the farmhouse and stuff like that, and like give her some just, I mean, god awful dialogue that they had to write probably on the fly, throw in there. And again, like I needed a heartbeat of this film, you know what I'm saying? Like, make me feel something. And they brought in my favorite character back from the dead and made him kick Steppenwolf's ass, and I couldn't feel anything, dude. I was just like, oh my god, that upper lip.
Well, and like, let's get into that final fight scene, because there's plenty here that I like and there's plenty here that I don't like. I think the fact that I would have loved either Superman at the beginning or Zero Superman, right? I would have been fine with either. And I really would have been fine. I would have settled for they bring Superman back, Lois snaps him back in, and he's like, okay, I'm here to work, right? You know, that's fine with me. I would have settled for that. But this whole do his thing out on the farm, and he's like, yeah, I guess I got to go help him out. Okay, I'll go fix his problem for him. And
I do owe him one.
Yeah, right? Which is like smarmy and like 0% Superman, right? Getting to the character, right? Existential threat to Earth. Superman's there before anyone else, right? That's his character. And when he's like relaxing at home while someone's trying to turn the planet Earth into apocalypse, and he's just sort of like, yeah, I guess I'll go over and help, right? This is not who he is. So don't get me started. So he just shows up in the middle of the fight and ends it, right? And so part of a good fight scene is a little give and take, and they kind of had it a little bit before Superman shows up and he just deuces on Steppenwolf, right?
From a power level perspective, like, I understand that, right? Like, I want to see Superman just destroy this fool as much as the next person, but it didn't feel earned, you know? Like, it didn't build up to anything. He shows up, he gives a Joss Whedon one-liner, and then just starts punching, right? And I'm just like, well, this fight's over, you know? Like it just, there was no weight behind any of it.
Well, and as thin as they made Superman, there were other characters that had a lot of, like, a really clear character arc from start to finish. And Flash is the easy call out, right? You know, he starts basically fixing, you know, basically handling a store being held up in front of him, right? No costume, no nothing. And he goes from that to Batman saying, hey, you're pretty cool, you need to come with me. And this entire time, he's like, man, how do you do the superhero thing? And one by one, each of the people make a connection with him, and they kind of help build him up and make him feel confident enough to actually do the superhero thing, right? You know, Batman says, you know, just start with saving one person, because he knows once he starts, he won't be able to stop, right?
That was like the best, that was probably honestly one of two like best character moments in the movie, because it felt genuine, like it felt real, you know? It was like, because he was super resistant, like he was just like, I'm not prepared for this, like I have not fought anybody, and so Batman's like, save one, you know? And the Flash, you know, has a great kind of, you know, clip back of like, then what? You know? And then Batman, you know, just provides that advice like, you'll know if you're in it to win it, you know, at that point. And that was great, man. That was a really cool, very Batman-esque type of advice, you know? So that was, again, like, a lot of the characters they got right. And a moment like that was great. Batman and Diana's fight about the morality of saving Superman, that was very reminiscent of, like, the interactions that you're looking for as far as discourse in the team. So that was amazing. Like, when freaking Diana just practically wrecks Bruce Wayne, you know, like, you thought he was about to be gone after he makes a little quip about Steve Trevor, you know. that was great. You know, there's little moments like that that really hold the film to where it is for me, so.
And there's more subtlety here than I really expected. The fact that Batman and Diana settle in very quickly as the leadership of the team, right? That's very Justice League. You have Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman as the Trinity. They sit on the top, and they provide the leadership and the moral core to this entire enterprise, right? And that's reflected in this, which is a little, you know, it's a subtle point that I didn't really expect a sort of back alley surgery movie to really kind of do well. And, you know, for everything like that, I sat for a while and kind of tried to think why they put so much characterization behind Flash and behind, I feel they spent a lot of time on Aquaman, right? And then it clicked immediately for me. Like, well, those are the next two movies coming up, right? We spent a lot of time with Aquaman. We even have a cameo for Mira, who is his eventual wife, right?
That was great too. Like, I wasn't really sure, because this is the first time in any promotional material, anything that we've actually heard Amber Heard talk as Mira, and so I wasn't sure what their dialect was going to be like, anything like that. And I loved her accent. I thought she actually did a really great job of doing a high English, for their dialect in Atlantis. And seeing that different take for just like surfer dude Aquaman and, high English Mira. Dude, I'm excited about that movie for sure.
And so from that lens, it makes total sense why Wonder Woman, she didn't really get the shaft, but she didn't get a lot of time in this show. She got a lot more after the reshoots because her movie did so well, right? But, they didn't spend just a ton of time with Diana. They didn't spend just a ton of time with Batman because... And I don't think they spent just a ton of time with Cyborg either, just because he doesn't have a movie that's coming up in the next couple of years, right? So if they're gonna spend time with him, it'll probably be in Flashpoint. That's my idea. But there's a lot to complain about with this movie, and there's a lot that's wrong with it. But I feel like, and this is my perspective, and not everyone's going to share it, but when you look at all the challenges this production had, and when you look at all the reasons why it should have not even come out, why they should have scrapped it and burnt it down and started over from the beginning, right? There's going to be, and Cameron, you're not a fan of this at all, right? Or maybe a little bit, but I think the appropriate metaphor is that you have two or three different people working in opposite directions, trying to get a plane on the ground in one piece. And it shows up in 1.5 pieces, right? And it lands ish and it's on the ground. And now they can start doing the work of building the next plane, right? I think the fact that this movie came out at all is a marvel of modern filmmaking. Because in any other circumstances, this show wouldn't have come out. I mean, honestly, I feel like that. The fact that it's on the ground, to me, is the success story. I think expecting more may not be a super realistic expectation, as hopeful as I like to be, right?
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of this movie. After seeing it twice, I probably will not be seeing it for a very long time, if I'm being honest with myself. But, like you said, it does leave the universe in an interesting position. However, it's also in a very interesting position in reality. Again, because it is going to... how successful it ends up being is definitely remains to be seen. But it is definitely not going to be what Warner Brothers was hoping. Because it didn't even make $100 million on a $300 million budget. So, needless to say, we'll see how profitable this movie really is, and what they will do going forward. For me, I hope that this is actually a good thing for WB, because what have we heard of in the last few months? We have heard more solo movie pitches than any any cinematic universe in a while, not even Marvel announces this many different kinds of movies with different ideas and, just throwing darts at a wall and seeing where it sticks, type planning for their universe. And so for me, I hope that unfortunately kills a lot of these side projects, and, it forces Warner Brothers to stay focused on what they need to do. Which for me, take a step back here, forget about anything that, people have said of them trying to copy. I'm telling you right now, 100% copy what Marvel is doing. focus on standalone films first. Make the best film possible in front of you, and then take the next step, If that means one movie a year for Warner Brothers going forward to start off with, then please, by all means, just do it. You know, if Aquaman is the only film next year, I'm happy. Like, make a great Aquaman film, and James Wan is going to. I guarantee it. As long as WB keeps their hands out of what he's made, which we can't guarantee, but let James Wan make his James Wan movie, and I guarantee you it will be a success. And then, next step, we have Wonder Woman 2 out that year. If that is the only movie that comes out next in 2019, then by all means, make the best Wonder Woman 2 movie possible. And then take that next step for 2020. Make Flashpoint and make it killer. Throw Cyborg in there if you need to. You know, just crush the Flash movie. You know, take that step as Flashpoint to maybe fix some more things if you need to. You've got the perfect opportunity with the perfect storyline. And then for me personally, have maybe take that next step and do two movies or something. You know, do Man of Steel. I need Man of Steel 2 real bad. Man of Steel 2 and Matt Reeves' Batman movie in 2021. You know, I don't know, man. I don't need this Joker standalone movie. I don't need a Deathstroke movie. I don't need a Nightwing movie. I don't need Suicide Squad 2. I don't need any of that, man. Like, make me love your main Justice League. And then come out and do a right Justice League movie that has the best possible scenario for those characters working together again. And then springboard that, you know, then expand your universe even more. I just think they need to really deconstruct what they've been doing and try to refocus on making quality over quantity. Because it just seems to be that they're trying to go for quantity over quality nowadays. So, I don't know. We should probably talk about the post-credits, because that's probably one of the best things about the movie. You have Superman and Flash have a fun conversation, even though I still had to ignore the lip thing, because it's a reshoot. It's not the original post-credit scene. But for what it is, you have Superman and Flash deciding that if Superman beats the Flash in this race, then Flash is off the team. And if Flash wins, he gets to tell everybody. And then Superman chimes back in. Well, if the Flash loses, then he has to take the whole team out to brunch. you know? Like, that was great. Like, I love that they paired up Superman with the Flash in a couple of these scenes to, like, give him some of that lighter tone that they've been trying to get back into Superman. So that was cool. And then, of course, the big one. The big daddy. Whatever you say about Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, this movie makes sure to give you the middle finger and be like, oh no, Jesse Eisenberg's still Lex Luthor. he's not going anywhere. Which I'm 100% on board for, because I was, again, one of the only defenders of Batman vs. Superman. I actually like what Jesse Eisenberg was doing. And it seems like he scaled it back a little bit for this too. So I think they're course correcting him too. But hey, he's not in prison anymore. And Deathstroke shows up at his boat party, and they're gonna create the Legion of Doom, it would seem. So I like the post credit scene though. Joe Manganiello looks cool as Deathstroke, and Lex Luthor is in the universe still. So that was cool. That was cool to see. I had heard that the original post credit scene was gonna do with Green Lantern, so I was actually shocked to not see that. And to see the Green Lantern tease and the original fight, retelling of the first time that Steppenwolf was in town. And so that was kind of cool, you know, just to see a Green Lantern for a minute. So they do tease the bigger universe at large there, too, because they've announced a Green Lantern Corps movie. Haven't heard anything about it since they announced it, but they have announced that, too. Let's not forget. Again, this, as far as Justice League is concerned, it leaves the universe in a... The world is their playground, right? You know, they've did a lot of course correction. You feel like they are at least a starting point for what they might want to accomplish going forward. But again, financials rule over everything. So financially, where does this actually leave them? So it's an interesting contradiction, really. You feel like they're finally in a position to do some interesting things, but you feel like they also have been now handcuffed by the financial problems that this movie's having. So, I don't know. What do you think about all that?
I mean, I'm really okay with handcuffs, to tell you the truth. I mean, DC has, well, WB through DC, it's obvious They want the Marvel money, right? They want the money that comes out of doing 3 movies a year, right? And they're perfectly willing to take, you know, shots in the dark at trying to make that kind of money, right? I think, you know, if I'm being honest, I think this will probably be a come to Jesus moment for them that, like, as evergreen as these characters seem to be, there is a limit to what the audience will accept. There is an upper threshold for critical disdain that the mass market can't ignore after a while. I think a lot of people looked at the success of Suicide Squad, the financial success of Suicide Squad, and, you know, I kind of looked at that with my head kind of tilted, and my conclusion from that was that, well, I guess what the critics say doesn't really matter when it comes to box office. But if anything, this year in particular, it has become exceedingly clear that movies with very high critical success before launch, they will exceed their projections on sales. And movies that have very low critical success will not meet those margins that they're supposed to get to. And it's getting to the point where people, I mean, we had, prior to Justice League coming out, we had a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics. It's now fallen to 40. And we were projected, I think the best projections prior to release had the weekend gross at about $110 million. And they came in at 96, right? And that $14 million may not seem like a whole lot when you're dealing in the difference between 96 and $110 million, right? But this is all about momentum, and it's all basically about, you know, if they just make their budget back and nobody makes any money, this is really, I mean, if we're being real, this is really, Justice League is the culmination of this WB strategy of pretend like we can do what Marvel does and just throw everything together, right? Suicide Squad was all about introducing a ton of villains into their universe at once, right? They had the same kind of thing with Batman versus Superman. There's like 3 stories going on in that show, right? Until now, I don't think they've hit disappointing sales figures, especially if their expectation were Marvel money, right? I don't think they've hit a weekend where they just bombed. I mean, and it's hard to characterize this box office reception as anything other than it's not like a total bomb. I mean, it's possible that this show has legs through the Thanksgiving season. Tell you the truth, I think most of the Thanksgiving family money is going to go to Coco, but, you know, there's a world of possibilities in front of this movie, but none of them, I think, include the status quo. You know, we rail against the decisions that the WB execs make when it comes to their quote-unquote universe, right? But it's because we feel a certain degree of ownership over these characters, right? If I could, I'd tattoo the bat symbol on my chest, right? This is the kind of attachment we have. And the executives at WB have shown for the past several years that they're not really particularly interested in what we have to say, but they are very interested in what the money has to say. And I'm with you. I think my final point on this is that nobody can really do the Marvel thing at the pace that they do it. There is no other studio, production company, conglomerate that puts out high quality movies at the scale that Marvel does. You just treat it as a historical fluke, a unicorn, a shooting star that will be here until it's not, right? To pretend like just because it's happening to somebody, it can happen to anybody is bizarre and not true. And if you modulate your expectations, or if WB modulates their expectations to the kind of success that Fox has with its superhero properties, which, by the way, Fox is ahead of WB when it comes to ability on this sort of thing, right? They can put out, I think, two a year and pretty comfortably, and they can do them pretty well. But if you pull back and you're just like, you know what? We can't make any money doing 2 or 3. So just do 1, right? Because, I mean, I've said it on the show a couple times, eventually you start to ruin these characters, right? It's the whole reason why Green Lantern isn't in this show is because of that Ryan Reynolds movie, which, you know, I hate to call it that Ryan Reynolds movie. Who directed it? Because Ryan Reynolds is the best part of that movie.
Interestingly enough, hit or miss director, but Martin Campbell, who did both The Foreigner this year and Casino Royale, which is easily like one of the best movies in the 007 franchise ever. So probably the best. So yeah, I mean, a very capable director, just a god awful movie that came out of nowhere.
So, and that's the whole reason why Green Lantern is in this show. And I think Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, they can put up with more abuse than Green Lantern can, but not by a lot. And if they want these characters to continue to be profitable and valuable in the video scene, in the movie scene, they are now on thin ice, right? This is, you know, like I said, I've been really positive about this movie because I desperately want them to succeed, right? I really want Justice League movies that are just as good as Avengers movies, right? That's what I want. And any sort of step in that direction for me is a plus, but I'd be kidding myself if I tried to say that this movie was great, good. I mean, fun, I think, is something that can exist independent of quality. And I'm comfortable saying that it's fun. There's plenty of issues with this show, and most of them come back to the production and the troubled history of making this movie. And if WB has learned anything, is that they can't treat a movie like a Lego set. You kind of need some talented people behind this stuff. You need to let them do their work. You know, my only real hope for the future is that, to be honest, I think Justice League is kind of the last of these. I see the thread through Batman vs. Superman, Suicide Squad, and Justice League, where WB was significantly overreaching what they were able to do, right? I'm with you. I actually did really enjoy Batman vs. Superman. There are stretches there. And there's more story in there than there needed to be, right? So they shoehorn more in there than needs to be there. And I don't know if it's Patty Jenkins or if it's just somebody over there grew a brain and they didn't try to do that with Wonder Woman, right? But I think Justice League is the last overstuffed movie that they're going to try. Pray to God, hand to God, I hope it's the last one. Because I think it will stop giving them returns that they need.
Well, it's so interesting too, because if you really think about it, Justice League is only overstuffed because they had to introduce three new characters and a villain. Its story in itself is so mind-bogglingly simple that it's actually more simple than probably even Wonder Woman. You know, a guy comes to Earth to take over the world. A team of heroes gets together to go defeat him. That's almost as complex as it gets. You add a little complexity with raising Superman from the dead, but that's about it, right? It's only stuffed in and only has so much screen time, again, because you have to introduce new characters that we've never seen before. So yeah, hopefully you're right. Now that we have this team introduced to some capacity at least, hopefully it's not an overstuffed buffet once again of, you know, smorgasbord, throwing this, throwing that. But who's to say otherwise at this point? So I don't know. You know, lack of talking in circles and circles and circles. Again, for me, not great. I didn't love it. I like the characters because I'm a big fan. But again, like, it's hard for me not to like the characters when I'm biased for them. I, you know, like the comics. I've liked what previous iterations of them have been. I like previous movies they've been in. So, of course, I like the characters. It's just the movie as a whole that unfortunately has too many problems for me personally to get over. And it's something that it's just disappointing because when you see the Justice League, this is the first time ever cinematically that a Justice League has been on screen. And so for a big fan, you know, you just expect a certain level of quality that I just don't think that they could get quite to. And that's unfortunate. But again, the universe is at a place where interesting things can happen going forward. So that's kind of my takeaway from Justice League.
Cautiously optimistic. That's what we like to stay here in the Hero Cafe. We hope you guys enjoy the show. I think you should go see it at least once. Cameron, do you think, or do you think it's worth missing?
No, I mean, if you're going to continue to stay with the universe, this isn't a movie you can skip. Right? I mean, things happen in here that you have to see. So you have to at least watch it once, no doubt.
Yeah. So watch it once, maybe matinee. And go in with pretty darn low expectations, and you might have more fun than you thought you would. But with that, we're going to wrap up and we're going to tease our next show. We've got the Hero Cafe weekend review that's coming up. We took a break last week, but this week we've got Coco, which is actually, I'm really excited for this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently it's great, so looking forward to that big time.
And then along with Coco, we've got kind of spotty availability for a lot of Oscar season movies that are coming out this time of year. So we're going to try to cover as much as we can. First up, we got Roman J. Israel starring Denzel Washington on front and center playing this kind of quirky dude. That one looks pretty interesting to me. We got The Darkest Hour, which features a Gary Oldman that I cannot recognize for the life of me, right? I can see it in his eyes a little bit, but it's wild. Gary Oldman's a fantastic actor. I mean, you put him in, you have him do anything, and that guy is amazing. And then it looks like I'm going to have the opportunity to see Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Screw you, Sam.
This one's been high up both of our lists. We love the director. We love his style. And just about anybody who's gotten the chance to see this movie has flipped out over it. Plus, you know, I live here in Kansas. Any chance to poke fun at Ebbing, Missouri is a plus for me. So, hopefully I get to see it because it's in Kansas City. I'm visiting folks up in Kansas City this weekend. Get to see it at the world-famous Alamo Draft House, which, by the way, is the official movie theater of the Hero Cafe. We don't have it here in Wichita, and you guys don't have it. You got to go to L.A. to go to the Alamo, don't you?
And it's not even built yet, so...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That sucks. Unfortunately, you can't get it if you're here with us, but if you have the opportunity, you really should check it out. If you've never heard of them, just look them up. They're the first people to do the dine-in movie theater, and they kick you out if they text. So that's also great. And then other than that, next week on the midweek show, we've got our spoiler cast for The Punisher, which would have been this week if we didn't have Justice League to do. It's kind of a weird situation. I didn't really expect big spoiler cast stories to stack up where we had to kind of queue them up. But I've had the opportunity to see one episode of Punisher so far because I've had a wild and crazy weekend, and I love it. It's fantastic. And to really kind of see a Punisher show that goes into the emotional depth of the character as much as, you know, the violence and the turn all the lights off and kill everybody and turn the lights on, everyone's dead, right? You know, that kind of stuff. You get both, which is not easy to do. So I'm super excited to, one, finish the show, and two, to really talk this out because I'm ready to go.
Spoilers, it's the best thing Marvel's ever done on Netflix. So it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Oh, boy. Okay, so... with that, we will leave you. My name is Sam Drake.
And my name is Cameron.
And have a better day. See you later.
Peace.